Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For 100 years, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 12th day of May, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois, and Channel Seeds. Matt will stick around this afternoon and join us for our recording of Commodity Week. That comes up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, posted to the website by about 5, and then it'll air on most of these radio stations tomorrow and through the weekend. Matt, along with Mike Zuzulo and Mike Cordoniere of Soybean and Corn Advisor, will join us. We'll take an in-depth look at those global numbers that USDA released earlier in the week and what they might really mean for the soybean market. Dr. Cordoniere, of course, a specialist on Argentina and Brazil. For this half hour, however, we'll also take a look at the weather forecast. That's with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. He thinks it's going to get warm. Actually, it's guaranteed to get warm in about 10 days, but he thinks it's going to stay that way and has some data to prove that. So we'll take that right through the end of the half hour on the Closing Market Report. You can always find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at some of the numbers as they finished up on this Thursday afternoon in Chicago at the CME Group. May corn is up 11 and a quarter cents, $3.85 and a quarter. July at $3.89, 11 and a half higher in December at $3.96 and a quarter, up 10 and three quarters of a cent. March corn at $4.04, up 10 and a quarter as well. Beans down 5 and a quarter at $10.64 and a half. July $10.72, down 6 and a quarter. And November beans at $10.61 and a quarter, 4 and three quarters lower. January, $10.58 and a quarter, 5 cents lower. Bean oil futures at $32.30, down 78 cents. Bean meal at $3.66.80, up $2.40. Soft red winter wheat at $4.58.50, up 9 in the May. July at $4.68, up 9 as well. And July hard red at $4.49 and three quarters, 7.5 cents higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $122.35, 47.5 cents lower for the June contract. May in the feeders at $147.17.5, $1.82.5 cents lower. August, they're down $2.12.5 at $147.15. And lean hogs, May contract $77.25, up 15. June, up 25 at $83.75. This is Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Crude oil futures are currently trading 28 cents higher for the day at $46.51 a barrel. The ethanol futures up a penny and 7 cents at $1.54 and 6 cents of a cent per gallon. The June gasoline or RBOB wholesale price at $1.57 and 9 cents. That's 2 tenths of a cent lower. Heating oil or diesel fuel is down 6 tenths of a cent at the hour at $1.39 even. And natural gas at $2.14 and 9 cents, up 2 and 4 tenths of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial average is 55 points higher at 17,714. The U.S. dollar is up 0.335 at 94.125. And gold futures for the day at $1,271.60, down $3.90. Here's what the weather forecast looks like. Partly cloudy, a low 50 degrees tonight. West winds to the northwest winds at 8 to 13. Tomorrow, 30% chance of showers after 5, mostly sunny. A high of 69, and then Friday night, a chance of showers after, or rather before 8 p.m. Showers and possibly a thunderstorm between 8 and 2 on Friday evening, then chance of showers after 2 a.m. Mostly cloudy, will drop to a low of 44, 70% chance of rainfall on Friday night. Saturday during the day, a 40% chance of rain before 8, mostly sunny otherwise, just a high of 54 degrees, will drop to 39 on Saturday evening, mostly clear and a low with a wind at 7 to 13. And on Sunday, sunny skies, a high of 60 degrees. And on Sunday night, partly cloudy and a low of 43. Monday, partly sunny and 65. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Mike Tenora of T-Storm.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker now joins us from Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to explore what's happened in Chicago and the USDA reports that were released earlier in the week. Hi, Dan. You have sunshine down there today?
Yes. We were cloudy for the first half of the day, but the sun has come out and the rain has disappeared, at least for a few days. I think we got rain in the forecast for the weekend, but things have kind of cleared out a little bit, at least for now. We had some pretty good storms down here Tuesday night. Other than that, everything's pretty nice down here.
From your
we like
look,
the cooler temperatures.
Yeah, we're going to have those cooler temperatures here over the weekend, too. And I know you're still thinking there might be something out there at this point. But what is it that drove the corn futures higher today?
Well, I think initial flush, just looking at the market, well, I think you'd have to say this is spread unwinding. People that were buying beans maybe over the last couple weeks or so was maybe buying a bean contract and selling two corn, buying a bean contract, maybe selling two wheat, whatever their ratio was. I think this was the day they decided that they wanted to take profits on that spread. So you saw selling in the when you're unwinding that spread, then that would bring selling pressure into the soybean complex, and then that would bring short covering then in the corn and wheat. I think that's initially. Now, I think fundamentally you have to say that this morning's export sales for corn was fairly positive. It basically has us running just slightly below what we need to run to meet USDA's export projection. The bean sales were probably viewed as somewhat disappointing, given that what we've had seen the past couple of weeks, things were pretty slow in the bean complex, at least on this week's report. So that is another reason. Another reason I heard is there may be some financial difficulties with the Malaysian oil company of some kind on trading palm oil, and that was one of the reasons that maybe got selling pressure going into the soybean oil market. So, and oil has been, you know, a big driving force of this rally. So that's what I think initially what took hold here.
What did you make of the USDA reports on Tuesday?
It didn't surprise me, given the information that I was receiving out of South America. My guess is that we've got some more downward adjustments in ending stocks levels. I think you're going to see some downward adjustment in South America production as time goes on, and that's going to be reflected in better exports, lower carryovers for corn and soybeans. I guess I was surprised the way the trade reacted. I mean, it was like they didn't know what was going on in South America, I guess. Or maybe they were just betting that USDA wasn't going to make any moves this month in making some downward adjustments in South America crop and bumping up our export demand. It was just going to kind of leave demand where it was at and pump out some hefty numbers based upon the acreage number and trend line yield. So I guess that the reaction, as strong a reaction as it was probably a surprise to me, because I thought the trade was kind of in tune with a much smaller South American crop. Obviously they weren't, or they were just betting that USDA wasn't going to recognize it and they were going to try to buy a break. Instead, they didn't get no break. Everybody wanted out of the barn door at the same time, and the way we went.
What does the technical landscape look like at this point?
Well, beans had to start off with beans are definitely oversold. Of course, they've been in an oversold category for a period of time. The breakout of the kind of the sideways pattern that we had kind of had going to us during the last week of April and the first week or so of May. We've kind of broken out of that pattern. If that could be used as a midpoint, then we got a ways to go. We probably got, you could maybe even argue that maybe November beans has a shot at 11 something, provided that right now I would say yesterday's action and today's action is what I would call is taking a breather or consolidating the big run-up that we had there on Tuesday. We may even see another day of that tomorrow. Then early next week, then it would probably be maybe ripe for beans to resume the upside if this breakout of this sideways pattern that we had in late April, early May is valid as a midway point that we're going to head to 11-something. Corn futures, today, not all contracts, but some of my contracts are flashing buy signals on my technical system. We on the lead futures chart, we do have the 50-day above the 100-day. If you go down and you can see that the July contract after today's action did trigger a buy signal on one of my systems, and the 50-day is climbing above the 100-day moving average. And the technical indicators are all in position to be at least a positive influence. So it does look like corn might be ready to take a run at the early May highs that we had here. July corn was around 95. And then, of course, that April high we had on July corn up to around 407. When you take a look at Deese corn closed above the 62% retracement level of the decline that we had off of that April 21st high of 409 in Deese corn down to the low that we had just prior to the report here, about 375. So, and it has closed above the 200-day moving average. Now, the 50. We still need a few more days probably before the 50 crosses the 100. But I think if that all comes to fruition, I think you're going to see a lot of technical buying come into this corn market. Fundamentally, what's going to do that? my guess is maybe the trade will start worrying about this last 10% of the corn or last 5% of the corn. I think there's already talk that maybe the bean market after Tuesday's big surge to the upside maybe bought some additional soybean acres. And that's the real key here is the trade, I think, in order to be in a comfortable supply-demand balance sheet for soybeans, they would probably like to see an 85 million acre bean planting. Now, USDA said on March 31st it was 82. I guess the big question is that we don't know anything, but was 82 correct when they gave us the number? You know, was it too low to start with, or was it too high? I don't. Nobody really knows that. But so that's what the function of the bean market here is to try to pull some acres away from corn. I think it's already pulling some wheat acres away. Wheat acres are in some instances wheat acres are being tore up that maybe got damaged for one reason, or the stand isn't good enough, or for one reason or the other, that we're going to bring in some soybean acres, and that's what the function of the market is. But technically, I like the corn market. You know, we finished the month of April with a monthly reversal up. In order to validate that monthly reversal up, we need to go through that April high point. And in that case, in Deese corn here, we need to kind of go above this 409 area. On July corn, we need to kind of pop ourselves up above 407 and a quarter. So that's something that I would be watching at least between now and maybe the next time I talk to you next week sometime.
All right. Well, we'll check in with you then. Hey, thanks so much.
Very well.
That, of course, Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, joins us each and every Thursday here on the Closing Market Report. One quick note, if you happen to have an eighth grader through a high schooler who you think might want to come to the U of I in the agricultural area, especially if it's crop sciences or somewhere in that biology sciences or in agribusiness, econ, the Illini Summer Academies are filling up fast, but there are some spaces left. I'll post this up to the website from June 26th to the June 29th for about $200, $220. They can come, live on campus. They'll be chaperoned the whole time. Go to class here and be in the dorms. That's called the Illini Summer Academies. Just search that in Google, and you can get your high schooler or eighth grader enrolled here for just a couple hundred bucks to see what it's like to live and go to school on the U of I campus. In today's agricultural news, it's likely that you remember the fertilizer plant that blew up in West Texas 3 years ago. After 3 years' worth of interviews and sifting through evidence, federal investigators have concluded that the West Fertilizer Company explosion was a criminal act. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosions Special Agent Robert Elder says all other possibilities have been ruled out.
As many of you know, this investigation is very complex with many moving parts. We ask for your patience as we move into the next phase of this investigation.
Well, Ben Pales is a longtime resident of West who helped to build the plant in the 1960s. He's not surprised the feds now consider the explosion a crime. He says it's just highly unlikely that fertilizer would explode on its own.
It had to have a charge of some sort to make it go, because I have farmer friends, and ammonium nitrate will not blow up unless you have a detonator.
Pales says a friend chased several people he saw running from the plant just before the fire. 15 were killed and more than 120 were injured in the blast. There is a $50,000 reward offered for help in solving the case. Let's move now from Texas to Washington, D.C., where farm groups are fighting back against the anti-trade rhetoric from the presidential campaigns. The National Pork Producers Council says losing the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, trade agreement would be a huge loss for the pork industry. NPPC spokesperson Dave Warner calls the TPP deal with the 11 Pacific partners the biggest commercial opportunity ever for the U.S. pork industry. Warner says free trade opponents need to know the trade field is already tilted against the United States.
In almost every case, the free trade agreement is more beneficial to the United States than to the other country, because those other countries often have trade preference programs that the United States gives them, and their products are coming to our shores either low tariff or duty free, yet we don't have that reciprocal trade with those countries. That's what a free trade agreement gets us.
Warner says agriculture and business must do more to educate the American public on the importance of trade. That in the face of a rising tide of anti-trade rhetoric from the presidential candidates. Warner adds that the TPP allows U.S. pork access to 500 million people in the fastest growing economic region of the world. Elsewhere in D.C., Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Pat Roberts wants any GMO labeling proposal from the committee's ranking Democrat, Debbie Stabenow, vetted by agriculture groups. A Kansas Republican, Roberts says any GMO labeling bill needs the approval from agriculture and food groups to be successful in the U.S. Senate. That, according to Politico, Roberts says we can't get anywhere unless the majority of the 800 agriculture and food groups approve of a GMO labeling proposal, adding, should that be the case, I'm ready to go. Roberts says he is still unclear what Stabenow is willing to agree with to set national standards on GMOs. Staff members for both lawmakers are reportedly hammering out the details for a bill with the hope of getting a proposal on the Senate floor before Vermont's labeling law takes effect in July. Finally today, farmers in Illinois, other states too, are struggling to control glyphosate-resistant weeds. Marestail can be one of the most challenging under no-till conditions prior to planting soybeans. More often than not, farmers are using a tank mix of glyphosate and 2,4-D. Sometimes the problem is that the weed is already too big to control. At others, says University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager, It's just that 2,4-D isn't doing the job any better than the glyphosate.
Well, there are some alternatives that can be used for control of Maristil in a burndown scenario. A product called Sharpen could be included with glyphosate 2,4-D to try to increase the efficacy on the Maristil. And if that's the case, be sure to include a methylated seed oil in with any application that has Sharpen with it. Or alternatively, you could switch completely over to something like a glufosinate product, like a Liberty or an Interline containing product, or something like Ermoxone. Either of those typically are going to perform better when they're used in combination with something like Metribuzin and probably 2,4-D in the tank as well.
Tillage is another option. However, Hager says to delay it until field conditions are suitable and be sure to till deep enough to completely uproot all existing vegetation. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Matt Bennett is here. He's with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. I bet you'd rather be out in the field than stuck in the office, but not moving yet, I suspect.
Yeah, we're awful wet still. We've missed some of the big rains this week, but we definitely are still too wet to farm. I'm thinking it'll be next Tuesday, Wednesday, before we can really get going again, especially if it's going to cool off as much as they're talking over the weekend.
Now, can you tell me just a little bit to the south and then back to the east of you in that Effingham area? They really haven't even turned a wheel yet, have they?
Yeah, there's a lot of areas when you get south of 70, depending on where you're at, the guys haven't been able to do much. I know, a couple of guys down in that Palestine area and south are talking that they haven't done anything. And so I've heard about a lot of corn getting turned in for beans, guys wanting to switch because they just can't do it this late in the game and they're too wet. And so, you know, there's a lot of things like that are going on south and east of us.
What'd you make of the USDA reports on Tuesday?
I wasn't real surprised, really, with anything, to be honest with you. I think we all knew that carryouts were going to be lower. I think that whenever you look at the grand scheme of things, a 400 carryout in years previously would have been a down-the-limit type of day. So I just think things have changed. Perceptions are different, and that's part of the reason why we saw such a drastic rally.
Why did we rally in corn today?
I think, there's more people talking right now about the weather, about potential acreage shifts. You know, I think there's a fair amount of that sentiment going on that people have been talking about, but maybe it hasn't really hit the forefront. And so, you know, I think that there's a fair amount of people, in my opinion, that had been buying beans and maybe selling corn. I think some of that might have been getting reversed a little bit today. So I think that the room for acreage to grow in corn or to grow in beans and go down in corn is very real, and I think people are talking about it more and more, especially with the weather and the difference in prices.
Have you begun to adjust your marketing thoughts?
My marketing thoughts stay pretty consistent. We want to look as closely at, locking in profit as we can. And so, every 50 cents in this bean market, we've been doing something. If guys got to the point where they thought they had enough beans sold on fall delivery, then we're putting puts onto the market. But we're protecting profit because, let's face it, 2 months ago, none of us thought we were going to see these sort of price levels. So we're trying to latch onto them as much as possible.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk to you during Commodity Week this afternoon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Matt Bennett, of course, with Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Back with the weather in 2 minutes.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
It's National Nutty Fudge Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1777, according to the International Dairy Foods Association, the first ice cream advertisement appeared in the New York Gazette. In 1934, dust shut out the sun over the East Coast for 5 hours, and dust was reported settling on ships 300 miles out to sea in what was the first nationwide environmental disaster. The Dust Bowl days of the 1930s were caused by the clearing of virgin prairie with plows, long drought, and high winds. and it resulted in the formation of the USDA Soil Conservation Service. In 1991, a new cancer drug was announced, which was found in the bark of a rare tree in the Pacific Northwest. And in 1994, Roy J. Pluckett died. He was the inventor of Teflon in 1938. Its invention was an accident. During World War II, the new polymer was applied as a corrosion-resisting coating to protect metal equipment used in the production of radioactive material. The first non-stick cookware using Teflon was sold in 1960. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Farm Credit Illinois joins in celebrating the rich history of Illinois agriculture.
This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us. It's going to be a busy couple of weeks. Farmers trying to catch up, not really playing catch up just yet, but hoping to get into the field to plant. Will they be able to?
Well, they'll be able to at some point. The big question, of course, is exactly when. As we move forward here over the next 2 days or so, a couple of showers and thunderstorms will affect a majority of the Corn Belt, and unfortunately for Illinois and Indiana farmers, they're in the firing zone both times. So there is going to be a little bit more in the way of rainfall here through tomorrow or tomorrow night, and then after that, it turns unseasonably cool for about 5 days. But the larger concern is not so much with what happens through the weekend, it's what happens right after that. We can see that a very sharp north-south temperature gradient is going to set up across the Corn Belt, and that's going to allow one or two big systems to roll through the southern half of the U.S., especially between Monday and Friday of next week. So there are going to be a number of significant rains coming up to the south of Interstate 80, especially as you move into the Delta. So Illinois, while certainly in the firing range for multiple rain events, best chances are a little bit further to the south, but we're fairly comfortable forecasting 1 to 3 inches of rain along and south of Interstate 80 over the next 1 week.
We've talked oftentimes, Mike, about the El Nino and its waning effect, the fact that it probably will bring us warmer temperatures. Is there any other data that suggests the summer, and it looks cool right now, at least for the next week or so, that the summer can be very warm?
Well, there certainly are a lot of interesting statistics that point in that direction. And one thing we should point out that we didn't mention about the upcoming forecast is that there are a number of signs that it's going to turn a lot warmer starting next weekend and then going forward into the end of May. So even though it will be very cool over the next 5 to 7 days, don't get too caught up thinking it's going to stay that way, because it will be a lot warmer later on this month. There's just a number of indicators that shows that a big system will develop in the Pacific Northwest, and that'll send temperatures soaring across the Corn Belt. We should see high temperatures in the 80s with lows in the 60s for a multi-day period, starting, let's say, around Sunday of next week, 10 days from now. So that's just kind of part number one. But part number two isn't related to El Nino or La Nina. And we would argue that this is more important than the El Nino or La Nina. If you look at temperatures beginning in the fall and lasting through the winter across the Corn Belt, we just had the fourth warmest in the last 121 years. So it was very warm in the autumn and winter. The reason that's important is because if you start looking at what happens the following summer, there's a very strong correlation between the following summer ending up hotter than normal. If you look at June, 75% that followed these warm autumn-winter periods were warmer than normal, 83% of July's. This sets off a little bit of concern for us because we say, well, you see a much warmer pattern at the end of May. You're only 1 week prior to June. So that's something to watch for sure.
Mike Tenura is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois, joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Glenn.